You can't be on that high forever. You're going to break down. Mm. You can't be on that low forever. You are also going to mentally break down. If you are designing for a residential space, which means there's a space that you live in, it should not make you feel uneasy because those feelings are just not sustainable.
Welcome to the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast with DIY healthy lifestyle blogger, Anna Fulmer, empowering you to transform your life one imperfect day at a time.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast. I am your host, Anna Fulmer. Today, I'm introducing you to Amanda Gunawan. Amanda is the founder of architecture and design firm Only Way Is Up, a company based in Los Angeles, passionate about creating sustainable design. I can't wait to talk to her. You should see their website and the really cool things that they are doing. Welcome, Amanda.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And you're in LA, right? You're LA based?
I am. Are you?
No, I am in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. Okay. Just literally as opposite as can be, on opposite sides of the coast and very different. We have Amish. This is Amish country.
I think I've been there. Yeah, I've actually been there. I haven't been to Lancaster, but I've been to Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Yes, it's a little different than LA, just a little bit.
I'm sure it is. Is it also nice and hot right now?
Well, probably not like LA. We are, what are we, probably like high 80s right now, 90. What is your temperature currently?
Yeah, we're also there. We're like 70s, 80s.
Oh, why did I think you would be so much hotter than us right now? I guess not.
Yeah, no. I don't know why, but we've had a pretty mild summer.
Okay. I could not have guessed that. That shows my ignorance too.
No.
California
weather.
We just
always assume. I mean, it's actually like it's a big surprise to everyone.
Yeah. Is it relatively temperate in LA? Like it's not super high or super low?
Yeah, like I mean, it gets hot during the day, but at night, like I don't, like if I was wearing like shorts, I'd probably need something.
I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Well,
you learned. So I don't know why in my head, LA was a lot hotter than what you just said. Well, something to learn always.
Yeah.
So I love on the podcast talking about people's backstories, and I really enjoyed looking over your website. You started your company, if I'm understanding correctly, this architectural firm, and you started it with, is it Joel?
Mm-hmm.
Is that his name? And are you both from Singapore originally?
We're both. So I was born in Indonesia.
Okay.
But I moved to Singapore when I was 5. And he was born in Singapore. And that's actually where we met. We were in high school together.
Yeah. And you, like, how did the, I mean, you don't always end up being a CEO, co-CEOs with somebody from high school. So how did that all start? You didn't like look at each other one day and be like, hey, you want to start a company? Or did you?
Yeah, no, not at all. Actually, it's very, very rare when you find somebody who has absolutely complementary skills from you.
Mm. Amen.
And so it's kind of like it's like an odd dynamic where you have all these skills and like individually, you could do well, but like together, like you guys can do really great.
Yeah.
So that's
together
what
you can
found.
Start a business.
Exactly. So every time we were working together, whether it was in Singapore where we would work together on like group projects, we would be like, wait a minute, like we're scoring really high on these tests or like we're doing really well. And so we realized that it's because like we were just going with it, right? Like when something works, you kind of just get into this flow state. You don't question it. So you just go with it. And so we ended up going to choosing the same architecture school to go to. Mm. He had to go to the military and then he came to, so I went first and then he came over and we actually, like we worked on projects together. We did it individually. We worked. Like our architecture school was so independent like that. It was so many projects all the time and we would do it individually first and we would be okay. We would do well. But then when we were together, we were like, damn, like these are great projects, like way better than what we can do on our own. And so even after we graduated, we went and we worked for the same company. We got accepted into the same company because we had presented this thesis together, and our thesis was one of the top theses of that year. Mm-hmm. And so the company took us both in. And then while we were there, a project that we had been working on together as well had won a competition a while back, and we just never thought about it. And then Paris Design Week caught hold of that and asked us if we wanted to exhibit. And that's kind of when we decided, you know what, like, we're young, we have so much energy, it's now or never. Like, we're like big risk takers right now. We're ready to fail if we have to. We have the energy. When you're young, there's not a lot to lose. So if we fail, then we fail it. So, like, let's just do this.
Right. Right. I love that. So tell me a little bit about Singapore. Is architecture and architectural design fairly common for a high school student to think through in Singapore? Or was that kind of unique to you and Joel that you really fell in love with architecture? I would also argue that's not super common, at least not over here, for a high school student to be like, I want to go into architecture.
Actually, it's not common at all. But in Singapore, the education system is a little bit different. It works for some people and it works less. It's less effective for some. I think right now it's definitely improved. But when we were in school, there was a focus on like book smartness. So basically, if you were good at school, you were good at academics, you probably would do well. It was a lot of memorizing. It was very militant style. And so with that, it's like how you make of it, right? So it's not like for a kid, it's hard to really understand why you're studying the way that you're studying, right? Kids just want to have fun. And our curriculum was not fun. Like we were learning things in like a very static way. But if you were the type of kid that was able to understand why you're doing this and connect it to the rest of the world, then you would enjoy learning, basically.
And it's the why behind the what. It's like, okay, exactly. Math, why do I need pre-calc? Exactly. Oh, because I can then design X, Y, Z.
Exactly. And so with architecture, like, it wasn't like it was in the curriculum, but our curriculum was very heavily focused on math and science. Now it's a little different, but at that time it was very heavily focused on math and science. And for me, like, I had been doing all of these, like, I had been like indulging in math and science all the time. And then I started to realize, like, in learning what I learned, I had all this creative energy, and the way that I expressed myself was always visual. And so, like, I started to combine all of that together, and that's how I got into architecture. But for Joel, it's a little different because his parents are both like fantastic architects. And so he kind of grew up, and they never put it on him, but he grew up being influenced by them, because they would travel, they would see architecture, they would explain to him the relevance of buildings. And so because of that, he definitely grew up already knowing that at a certain point, you kind of decide, like, that's what I want to do. And then, yeah, combined with his talent, of course, he's very talented. And then
we'll give Joel a shout out. What is Joel talented at? Joel, I don't even know you, but we're going to give you a shout out here. What is Joel talented at?
A lot of things, but he is a very competent executionist.
Like taking an idea and then putting it into practice.
Yes. Very good.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. He's very, very good at just making things happen. Like,
yeah,
conceiving something.
Yeah. How do you complement that?
I am more like the ideas person.
Yeah.
Like, I can't move when it comes to, like, I need purpose. I need meaning. Yeah. So I'm like a big starter too. So I'm usually the one that starts it, and I usually am the one that adds like a narrative to things. And when I have his buy-in, he is the one that's like, okay, how do we make this happen?
He's the hammers and nails. He's the one that's ultimately putting the pieces. Exactly. I love that. I love that. You do need both.
Exactly. And it, like, in a bad situation, it's bad, right? Because, like, we've like butt heads multiple times.
Yeah.
Like, multiple times where it's like, I want this to happen. I'm not willing to move. And he's like, it can't. Like, he's more like, I wouldn't say skeptical. He is just the
he's more cautious. He's more,
yes, exactly. So he
sounds like my husband and I.
Right? Yeah. And it can be so annoying, but we've also learned to understand what each other's skills are. And so we really don't want to dull that in each other.
It's kind of a beautiful melding of the minds, because I mean, literally what you're describing is my husband and I. Now, I'm also a very proactive person. However, to what you're saying, like, so my husband and I have renovated and designed, completely redone 3 homes now. So certainly not to the extent that you are designing and the architecture standpoint. However, I'm more of the visionary. Like, I can walk into a space and see something that is not even close to the physical reality. And then I would explain it to my husband and be like, I want to do this, this, and this. And he'd be like, I'm sorry, what? You're going to do that with this? Yeah. And it did it. It took a number of years. And now we trust each other more, because when I say, here's what I want to do, he has seen that come to fruition. So he's not quite as cautious then in this sense of like, I don't know that I want to invest that money because I don't see the outcome happening. Now it's like, okay, I'm willing to invest that money because I trust you. I've seen you do. I've seen your vision come to life.
Yeah. It's so important to gain their trust like that.
Yeah,
it really is. And it's so important to like allow each other to both have the space to be at their best.
Yeah.
So like, you should never force a fish to climb a tree.
Right.
And so for me to say, okay, I wish you weren't like that, or like for me to dull that down and say, I don't want to hear feedback like that, it would be so like, why choose him as a partner?
Right. Right.
Right. Like, if I took that, if I took that feedback, I took his skills and I brought it forward, it could make whatever project that we had into like the best project it can be, because it would have the best of both worlds. But if I was just stuck in my own head, and I was rejecting these things, even though clearly these are his best skills, then the project would just be mine. It could only ever be mine.
Hey, parents.
Yeah, you.
Are you looking for a podcast your kids will really love?
Well, we made one just for you.
And for us.
As genuine, all-natural kids ourselves, we know what makes a fun and interesting podcast.
So we decided to make it ourselves. Every show is packed with interviews, stories, and on-the-ground reporting.
We have interviewed everyone from scientists to Grammy Award-winning musicians to NFL quarterbacks.
Listen to Wild Interest wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. Well, it's so hard when you're adding the business element, because you add the money piece. I mean, that's just a reality with any business, is now you're looking at the profit margin, and anytime you're investing money, there's that added risk and the added tension that exists. And then you're in an area like LA, which I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest is probably a fairly competitive place to be starting a business. So that's, I love what you guys have done. What kind of hurdles have you faced in that vein? I mean, in a place like LA, this is not a walk in the park.
Oh, multiple. Like, it's every day there would be like an obstacle, but I personally, the both of us, we don't believe that anything is inherently bad. I think we see it as like, okay, look, well, this is a learning experience. It looks like we have yet another learning experience. Mm-hmm. Like, how do we take away from this? And so there's a lot. I can't even name one because there's so many.
Yeah. So, right.
From people management to knowing how fast to grow, like gauging your growth, knowing like the fine balance between that at all times, because if you push a little too hard, you guys will break, like the whole company will break. And then if you're a little too slow, like it's like you feel you're the pressures growing. Of,
Yeah. And how many staff do you have? How many are on your team?
We have a building and design side. So with both the building and design side, we have about 10.
Mm-hmm, that's awesome. And then you work with clients. Do you ever get the client where they want something done and you kind of look at them and you're like, what? that's not happening. Like, have you ever had that experience where you feel like a client is expecting something and you're like, from a design standpoint, this is
luckily not happening? Not to that extent, because we've had, funnily enough, maybe that's happened with like my best friend. I've only ever been like straightforward and honest about it. And sometimes I don't even know if she's joking and she's trying to like just annoy me or something. But so I've designed my best friend's house multiple times. So she moved from here to Austin. And sometimes she
Which I hear everyone's doing, by the way. Austin is the new LA. This is what I'm being told.
Yeah. That's it's hilarious. Really great. I'm actually visiting this weekend.
Oh, sorry. I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, not at all. Not at all. Sometimes I don't know if she's joking, but it's not like she sends me something terrible. Like I'm just like convinced that I can make it cooler, you know?
Yeah.
Like I'm like,
what is the funniest thing that she sent you that you're like, is this a joke or not?
Actually, it's not really that funny. It's just these kitchens, but to me, they're really basic.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I would be like, so she's very excited about her kitchen and she's like, I want to have like something very nice, like super elegant and all these things. And she knows this, like she trusts me. And like sometimes she would send something that is just off of like, I don't know,
like a stock cabinetry kitchen.
Yeah. Something like that. And then she would send it over and she'd be like, I want it like this. And I don't know if she's joking. And I'm like, look, just trust me. Like, I know what I'm doing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny that you mentioned the kitchen. My husband and I say my husband, I have this conversation with myself and Zillow, basically.
Yeah.
When I'm looking at these houses that come on the market, we're currently renting until we buy our dream property is the goal after fixing up three other houses over the last 10 years. However, what kills me is when I see these $1 million homes come on and the kitchen is not as nice as the one that I put into the 1400 square foot home that we renovated. Mm-hmm. To your point, it's so funny. It's like the design concept of why would you have a killer master bedroom and then the kitchen is like...
Totally. And you know, to be honest, like good design and price, like affordability, they're not mutually exclusive.
Exactly. Yeah. And well, and the concept of quality over quantity, that's another conversation I have with people is like, they look at their kitchen and they think they need more square footage. Totally. And I'm like, no, you need to better leverage the square footage you have. You don't need to pay $1 million for a bigger kitchen. You need a better kitchen.
Exactly. No, 100%. And like, good design is not, it doesn't have to be expensive.
Yeah, absolutely. This is another question that I love to ask before we get into more of your design expertise. Can you think of a time, whether it be from a business standpoint or even a design standpoint, where you made a mistake? We kind of talked about this a little bit, but you know, you made a mistake, which then leveraged itself into a very beneficial lesson learned, whether it was like an actual architectural design mistake that you're like, oh, yikes, or a business one or whatever.
Let's see. I think, there was this one time, but this one's like, I'm sure there are many, but like there was
no worries.
This one time this one is a simple one where I actually gave the wrong, like I had chosen the wrong color for a table, the wrong wood color. And the thing is, like, for some reason at that time, like, I wasn't checking my phone. And we talk on the phone all the time. We have a group chat. And it was for a client, actually. And so instead of, like, light wood, I had chosen dark wood. And nobody had questioned me on that. But I completely sent the wrong thing. Like, it's almost like I woke up, I haven't had any coffee, and, like, I just chose the wrong one. And then
it's all about the coffee, people. Coffee saves lives. And seriously, saves design.
So, like, I had just completely chosen the wrong wood. And I chose, like, a dark wood. And the table was made. Our team made it. And it came out and I was like, oh my gosh. And I kind of had to wing it a little bit.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is what I chose. Like, yeah. I really had to wing it, like, initially. Yeah. And then,
so now how do you wing it? Tell me how winging it looks. So you're doing it for a client. I mean, that's like, that goes in their house then, right?
Yeah. So at first, so when it's made, I see it in the wood shop. Mm-hmm. I come in and I'm like, and everybody was like, oh yeah, like no, because no one knows, right? No one actually really knows because design is pretty subjective. And it as an actual table, it's nice, even if it's dark wood.
Right.
It's walnut now. It was supposed to be like a very light birch. So I was like, if you've seen all our older aesthetics, they're all very light. Like everything is super light wood. And like, that's just our familiar territory. Mm-hmm. And so we had designed this person's house. Everything was light wood. Everything was light. The walls were light. Just our usual thing, comfort zone mm-hmm. thing. And for some reason, it slipped my, totally wrong decision. Yeah. I just picked the wrong wood. Everybody didn't think to question me. And it came out and I was like, oh my God. I realized I was the one who chose this. I had nobody to blame but myself. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I look at the table and I was like, I didn't show any panic at all. I was like, yeah, well, I mean, this is great. And like, obviously I was kind of panicking, and then it got delivered to this person's house and it actually looked good. And so because of that,
did you change anything in the house to try to help blend it in? Or did you just sort of leave it from a design standpoint?
It actually worked. That was kind of like, that was the first time I actually learned to appreciate walnut. And I was like, wait a minute, like, it doesn't have to be that. Like, I can actually like do a little bit of dark, a little bit of light, and then mm-hmm. mix it up a little bit. Like, mm-hmm. I don't have to be so militant in choosing only light aesthetics. And yeah, that was the first out of many.
Yeah. I'm just curious. This is a total side note, and then we'll get into more of your expertise. But I'm curious, if you mix wood, so this is a question that I get asked sometimes. Is there a certain rule that you go by in terms of, people ask me often, how do I know what woods or what stains complement each other? Because I would actually agree. I'm more of one to mix light and dark, but I think you have to be strategic about it. There's certain mm-hmm. tones mm-hmm. that I don't think work as well, but I'm curious, do you have any, like when you look at the wood stains, how do you say, okay, these two complement each other, these two do not?
Yes, definitely. Like, I would say there are little things, easier ways to look at it where it's kind of like tone. So if you actually look at different types of wood, there's light wood and there's dark wood, but you can also see that there are different tones. So there are tones that are more neutral, and then there are tones that are more green. So there's like a green hue to it. And then like there are tones that are more pink. So mm-hmm. there's pink, green, and neutral. And so it kind of like, so you can't mix these tones together. So this is the general consensus for me. Like, something that's green tinted will not mix with something that's like pink tinted, because they will mm-hmm. clash together and you'll really be able to see it, unless that's the look that you're going for. And so that's like the general consensus for me. But when it comes to whether to go light or dark, when you're already in that category of green tinted wood and pink tinted wood, like, it is about viewing the whole space as like a painting, like a canvas. And so it's compositionally, you don't want too much of one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of has to stand out. So if you're going to have a lot of dark, then you're going to need light to balance that out. So I always believe in a space that's balanced. Like, for example, if like the space is cluttered, right? Like, there's just so many colors everywhere. Then you have to take that into consideration too. You have to take all of that noise in, and you're not going to be adding more chaos to that by putting in contrasting woods everywhere.
Yeah. I love that. So what I've always termed is kind of like, which is really what you just did with green and pink. In my head, I've always looked at it as like warm and cool toned woods.
Yep,
and
totally
agreed. I have found as well that as long as you're mixing the warm tones, whether it be mm-hmm. light or dark, and you're mixing cool tones, whether they be light or dark, they do tend to blend better. But it's, for me, it's that design aesthetic. When I see, I always come back to kitchens, when I see like the stools have a really, really red tone, wood to them, but then the cabinets or the kitchen table is like a very cool toned wood, that's when I'm like, no.
yeah, I know what you mean.
What kind of woods, for people curious, just lay out, what are some cool toned woods? What are some warm toned?
So I feel like it's a whole spectrum. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that even when it comes to oak, it's about the stains. Mm-hmm. Like, there yes. would be yellow oak that's obviously more white. More warm. Mm-hmm. And then there are, if you stain it a different way, then it becomes neutral. Right.
That's a good
point. And then if you stain it a different way, it becomes cool toned. And so birch, I would say, is a little more pink, like pink tone. Mm. Yeah.
And then there's like cherry wood. Cherry is pretty common here in Lancaster. I see a lot of cherry and pine.
Also pink tone, I feel like.
Yeah. 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 Pine, I think, might be,
green tone.
But yeah. To your point, though, you can also definitely stain it to look a lot warmer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
That would actually be a really interesting thing to create, is like a full spectrum of just the natural state of wood across mm-hmm. the cool to warm, like raw. And mm-hmm. then here are the different stains that would help pull it a little bit more neutral or a little bit warmer, depending on where you want to go. I think that's
totally
interesting. Yeah,
totally.
I'm like, all right, that might be my next blog post. It'd be helpful for myself, for that matter.
Is pine like a common thing there?
Yeah, I would say pine is a pretty common wood used here. And again, Lancaster County is very much like, at its roots, is a farming community. So that more like American farmhouse type of look, which is a warmer, like that oak, pine, cherry type and they tend traditionally to be stained warmer.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, it's, I don't so personally cool. prefer it. I actually go more, I love French country farmhouse, mm-hmm. which is definitely a more like, I like the more neutral toned wood, like an aged, it's very layered.
It's so interesting, like, because like in NorCal, it's all redwoods. And so it's just so interesting to see the different architecture and like how the houses that come about change according to climate and like what kind of trees are available.
Yeah. So here's actually an interesting story. I was looking for a table. I love breakfast nooks. I think they create a lot more space in small homes, because then you don't have like a dining table in the middle of a room. Anyways, so this house that we renovated, I wanted to design a 5x5 foot table, but I wanted to use, I had a very specific look that I wanted. Random story. I found this restaurant store that had these tables. So I'm like going through and trying to figure out who built these tables for them. It was in California. Yeah. And it was, I can't even remember the name of the company now, but the bottom line, it was this company that only made tables for restaurants. And I was like, would you make this table for me residentially? Mm-hmm. I can't remember their names now, but it was from reclaimed Douglas fir wood in California.
Which is a very Californian thing, right? Yep,
it was a California-based company. So anyways,
Super cool. Did you get
it? Yeah, I did. Yeah. So I had
Okay. So it's
massive.
A happy ending.
Yeah. Massive. So it's a 5x5 foot table. Shipping was like more expensive than the actual table itself.
I know, right?
But I bought a big wrought iron scroll base, and then I basically like put them together and
super
anyways.
Cool. Yeah.
So eventually I want to redo this table. And where I'm going with this is, I don't even know the answer. What is the raw tone of Douglas fir? Is it warmer?
I would say,
because they stained it for me and everything, so I don't even know what the raw.
Yeah, I would say it's a little warmer, but it's not too warm. So it's a little neutral to warm. So if there's like a whole spectrum, it's like a little bit too warm.
Okay. Because I'm really one day I want to refinish it. We've had it for quite a few years now. And I was like, huh, I wonder how warm this wood is, because I want to neutralize it a little bit. Anyways.
Yeah.
So I have Douglas fir from California.
That's awesome.
In my kitchen. Yeah, it was fun.
I'm happy you got that. Like, sometimes you need what you need. You know what I mean? Like, you see something.
Yeah, and this dude was like, are you sure?
Twice the price. Yeah. But you're like no, yes. I need what I need. Yeah.
And it is so heavy. I mean, it is a solid, solid tape. I think it's like this thick. Anyways, I love it. I'm excited to redo it. We're going to take a really quick break, but when we come back, stay tuned for a speed round of This or That with Amanda. We're going to learn a little bit more about her and her expert advice on sustainable interior design. We're going to hear more of expertise and what her amazing company is doing right when we come back.
You have tried it all. Worried you will never lose the extra weight or reclaim the energy you once enjoyed? Want to achieve fat loss without spending hours in a gym or eliminating entire food groups from your diet? Well, now you can. In the virtual Faster Way to Fat Loss with Anna, my 6-week fitness and nutrition program, you will learn how to pair effective 30-minute workouts with all-natural, evidence-based nutritional strategies to leverage what you eat and when you eat to reset your metabolism and burn fat fast, even that stubborn belly fat. I am a dual-certified nurse practitioner passionate about teaching sustainable strategies to promote fat loss and prevent disease. I have cheered on thousands of clients who have done just that with the Faster Way program. In my 6-week program, the average client currently sheds 7 inches of body fat. 93% report more energy, and 89% state that their mental health has improved. 100% of clients report they feel this program is sustainable. Curious to try the program, but not sure if the strategies will work for you? Try the Faster Way strategies for free. Head to www.hammersandhugs.com and sign up for my free 7-day fat loss accelerator course today and start your own transformation story.
All right, we are back here with Amanda. Amanda, we're going to play a speed round of This or That. You'll get 2 options. You can pick whatever comes to mind first. No stress.
Oh, no, I'm terrible at making decisions.
Joel, we need you. Joel, where
are
you?
Seriously. I'm terrible, but let's
help Amanda out. Okay. Would you rather eat chocolate ice cream or vanilla ice cream?
See, I don't even like ice cream, but chocolate.
Okay. Let me ask you this. If you want a sweet treat in LA, where do you go? What do you eat? If you want something,
I get a matcha latte.
Ooh, a matcha latte. From where? Where's the best matcha latte?
Maru. There's a place called Maru. M-A-R-U.
M-A-R-U. I am always asking for food recommendations. This podcast has like food recommendations from all over the world.
Really? Yeah, Maru.
Yes.
Maru.
Okay,
coffee.
Maru.
I get a matcha latte. I get a matcha donut.
Wait, a matcha donut?
Yeah.
What color is that? Is that a green donut?
So good. Yes, it's green.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Huh. Now I need a matcha donut. I wonder how that would taste. I'm curious. That's cool. Okay. Well, if you are listening from LA, you need to go to Maru. And if you're not in LA, but you're going to LA, now you know this is where you get your matcha everything, including donuts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Would you rather a paper planner or a digital calendar?
Paper.
Paper. We must 100%. Be close to the same age. Do you have color coordinated markers, pens that you use?
I have a lot of pens. I love stationery.
Same. Don't take, my husband is so desperate to get me completely digital. And I'm like, no, I must have my color coordinated. This kid is this color. This kid is this color. My podcast is this color.
Yep. When it comes to like planning stuff or like to-do lists, I need it physical.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sticky notes have saved my life.
Totally.
And my sanity.
Yeah. Why change it? Right.
Nope. I won't change it. Yep. Sorry, babe. I need my paper. Okay. Would you rather shop online or in a store?
In a store.
In a store. Where's your favorite place? If you walk in, you will not be able to walk out without a bag. Oh, without a bag of something.
Let's see. This is hard.
You probably have so many out
exactly,
there.
Exactly. Because I have like so
very
many.
Specific.
Because there's so many. Yeah. Well, there's this store. And the weird thing is, I don't even know the name.
Their marketing must not be that good.
I can't remember the name of the store. But
they need to take notes.
I'm a member. I'm a member at that place. I just don't remember the store.
Wow. You know your marketing is bad. When? Okay, what do they sell?
The store. So they sell clean beauty stuff.
Okay. And so it's a beauty company.
Yeah. So no, so they're just a
clean beauty store. What about their products? The name's not on their products?
So they sell a bunch of clean beauty brands.
Okay.
So they stock a lot. Yeah. They have perfumes. They have like lipsticks, like eyeshadows, everything that you've always wanted to try. But like, so you see it online and you've always wanted to try it, but you're just not sure. And so this place has it all. And they get new ones in all the time. And I just love stuff like that. And like every trialing. Time I go in there, like I would get at least a lip gloss.
We can't tell you the name of the store, but it's amazing. And you all should go.
It's next to a coffee shop that I frequent too. So it's like, I go to the coffee shop.
It's a beauty store next to a coffee shop in LA. Good luck.
Exactly. Exactly. There are, there's only one, obviously.
I love that. That is so funny. Okay. Well, you can message if you're in LA and you really want to visit this place, you can email Amanda and find out. Maybe she can send you the directions. That's so funny. Okay. Last question. Would you rather design a kitchen or an outdoor space?
Kitchen.
Is that your favorite place? Like, what makes you, when somebody says, I want this designed, you're like, oh my gosh, it's Christmas. What's your favorite thing to design?
When someone says they want to design something with Asian influences.
Ooh, love that.
Yeah.
I love that. That is exciting. I would feel that way if somebody was like, yeah, I want a French country kitchen. I'd be like, I'm in.
Yeah, exactly. There's some things you're like, yes.
Yeah. Okay. On totally. The flip side, what is your least favorite? You'll design it and you'll be amazing at it. By the way, if you're a potential client listening, she'll be amazing at it. But what is like your least favorite thing?
Someone who wants like something very ornamented.
Okay.
So someone who is like, I want like who likes like something gaudy.
Okay, like an over the top.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of like a name of an example of that. I know what you're.
I actually just did one. Like I just on Monday, like I just submitted the design proposal and it was for a restaurant.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. And so the restaurant wanted something that was really like they wanted me to recreate basically the feel of walking into a Spanish woman's kitchen and an Indian man's house combined together. And so
to walk into a Hispanic kitchen in India, basically.
Yeah. So it's basically these two characters and one is a Spanish lady and the other one is like an Indian guy and it's an Indian Spanish restaurant.
Okay.
And so
interesting.
Like they come together and they built this restaurant. And so I really had to play onto the narrative, which is fine. And I love that. But like, I really had to think about like, imagine designing for your mom. Like imagine putting on a thinking cap for your mom. Like my mom loves stuff. Like she is gaudy.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yes.
Actually, the farmhouse style is a little bit like, not the farmhouse style that I like, but the like traditional American farmhouse, kind of the country style is, I think, a little bit what you're saying in that there's a lot of knickknacks. It's very like knickknack. Although what you're talking about, the Spanish meats, that I would just imagine has a lot of color and ornamental. I know what you're saying.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
There'd be a lot of layers to a lot of things.
Because it's part of their culture. They like, you can't turn them minimalist, right?
Yes.
Especially someone from my mom's generation. My mom is not a minimalist. At all, by like no means. I needed to really like,
it's challenging, especially because I know, because I've been on your website and I know your style and it's beautiful. And I appreciate both when they're done well. But to your point, I can see what you're saying. It would be really hard if you are by nature a minimalist. It'd be like somebody asking me to design something really modern. I would be like, I'm sorry.
Right?
Keep going. It's I wouldn't be able to do it because I'm not a true designer. I like what I like. I'm by no means. Don't hire me. Hire Amanda. Don't hire me. Yeah, I'll have vintage stuff everywhere and you'll hate it. I am no modern designer. So speaking of your style, this is a really great lead-in. I loved on your website, you were talking about, and this is very like, goes beautifully with the minimal aesthetic, but you and Joel talk about creating a design that results in uncharged space. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really interesting concept. Talk to us a little bit about, one, what is uncharged space? Mm-hmm. Why do you design mm-hmm. uncharged space? And then mm-hmm. the third element to it is, how do you create uncharged space? So the what, why, and then the how.
So I think it all kind of like goes back to like where this all stemmed from, right? Like what is our conviction in trying to be designers? And it all happened for me maybe in like 2016 when I went to Japan, and I would always visit these like Japanese style homes called ryokans. And so the whole experience of it is that when you go to a ryokan, it's always kind of like a vacation. So everybody in the city is stressed out. You take a train out to like the countryside. You go to this place, like a Japanese ryokan, and it's just so peaceful. And so the place is beautiful, and the way that it's designed is so beautiful. And like the whole experience, the hospitality, etc. And you just feel at like this level of ease. Like your mind is still, you feel so centered and everything just feels good. And then you take a train back and you come back to the city and you are again back to your hectic self. And so I think I spent like, I just wanted so much to be able to recreate that in our daily lives, because I'm like, even though we live in the city, why are we unable to feel that way? Why? Amen, right? Because it's actually a very, that should be our neutral feeling. That should be our default feeling. Why is stress our default feeling? And that is an exception. Why can't that feeling be a default feeling? And then stress is the exception, right? And so I just wanted to create spaces that would make people feel like that. And I started really studying like, what is it about a Japanese ryokan that was able to do that? And what is it about these places? And there is like a big like spiritual, philosophical, psychological element to all of these things, of course, but it's able, but these ideas, right? Like how I said, ever since I was young, I like analyzing all these things, but then my mode of expression was always visual. Like it would come out in like visual
ways. How do we take the concept and visually create it? Yeah,
exactly. And so like, how do I create that? And I realized that like things that are sustainable, things that actually last a long time, are things that never really energize you. They should not spark you, because these things are that feeling of like ecstasy or that feeling of like depression that should be like that highs and lows that should, that's not sustainable.
It's like temporary. Should be temporary.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You can't be on that high forever. You're going to break down. You can't be on that low forever. You are also going to mentally break down. And so with that, like I wanted to try to recreate that neutral feeling. Right. And because to me that is sustainable. And so if you are designing for a residential space, which means it's a space that you live in, whether you live or whether you work, you're spending every day there. Like it's going to need to feel like that. It should not like excite you in any way. It should not like, it should not make you feel uneasy in any way, because those feelings are just not sustainable. Like that is okay if you go on vacation. But
right. It's like the high of like you're in the really, yeah, like the unusual, ornamented is a great word for it. It's like, it's a little excessive. It's a little over the top. And maybe that's okay for a vacation, especially if you're in a different culture where that is inherently part of it. Also the flip side, the deprivation of it, like where there's too little, where you're in this space that almost feels like a hospital would be a great example. It's almost sterile. It's not neutral. It's sterile. It's not even, there's no depth to it. I'm hearing as you're describing this, and I'm spitting it back out, is that sustainable? I'm hearing a sense of balance is really what I'm hearing. Like it's a design aesthetic that feels very balanced or sustainable in that sense, that it's not screaming at you. It's not like
totally. Yeah. I think it's all about that. It is about balance, and it's different for each individual, but there is a general idea, because we can all agree like you and I may have different thresholds for like what excites me and what excites you, but I may be able to take more and you may be able to take less, but we can all agree that bungee jumping every day, that's too much, right? That is an extreme high. So those are precisely like the things that like can be agreed on. So there is a general benchmark for what that
there's general design concepts that humanity as a whole, for the most part, will see certain colors as very stimulating and not a balanced
sense.
Totally. So talk to me. I completely agree. Talk to me then. How do you create this? Give me some examples, practical design examples of creating that balanced, sustainable space.
I think it's like what we talked about in the beginning, where it's viewing it as a whole canvas. So you would design all these individual parts to basically be good enough. But when they all come together, they all have a relationship with each other. Yeah. And when they all come together, they are working to create this like whole beautiful space for you, like a whole balanced space.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I know that sounds very abstract, but like everything has to work in tandem with one another.
Yeah. Well, and I think we touched on that a little bit, just even the idea of, generally speaking, mixing the warm wood tones or the warm wood stains, whatever the final result is, with cool ones is generally speaking, whether you recognize it consciously or not, is going to create a sense of imbalance, because aesthetically, it actually does not seamlessly work together. And you might not think about it, but it ultimately is not quite that balanced aesthetic. Totally. I'm like trying to even think of examples, like having looked at your website. I love what you guys do. But even just the mixture of natural elements creating almost like a natural lighting aesthetic, whether it's the pink colors that you use, the wood tones that you use, that was something else that I saw, is it felt like there was a lot of natural elements, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nature is very balanced naturally. Uh-huh.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And trying to incorporate things like, or leverage things like natural light always, things like that. And like, basically like open circulation, things like that.
When you look at a space specifically, do you have an intentional process? I'll just give an example because I don't know how else to word it. But I usually in a room or in a kitchen or our family room will often try to keep it relatively balanced, but then I'll have like one pop that I especially want. So the last house we did, the whole backsplash and then the wall, which was stepping down, was reclaimed brick. And that was like the main pop. Like I did not include a whole lot of other pops of color or texture because I wanted it to primarily, and it blended with everything else. Or like in our family room, it was an antique fireplace mantle. So like I try to pick one thing that I want to pop, and it's almost like that's what your eye is drawn to when you walk in the room. So it's the sense of like, ooh, pretty. Cause I want that to pop. That's my process. And then I design everything around that one pop of dimension and texture is how I do it. Do you have a process that you use that you're like, this is where I start?
Yeah. My process is always to take in the past. So like history is very important to me. And whatever that may be, that may come in the form like of the previous house. And when that happens, then I'm trying to think in my head, what can I save? And if there wasn't a previous house, right? Like, let's say this was an empty land, then I would take in from the nature around it. But it's always contextual.
Yeah. Like you're reclaiming something, like a source
or a
product of some sort. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, can you give an example of that? Like you took
there.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. So one of our projects this year was a mid-century modern house. And it was kind of old already. Like if we hadn't come in and done anything to it, I feel like somebody would have just torn it down and built something else, because a lot of it was in a condition where like I think a lot of people would like want to go through the trouble of saving it. But for us, like we definitely like I wanted to save some parts of it. Some things were not like they're not savable, and like so we wanted to save some parts of that. We wanted to preserve the identity of that house. And then we wanted to inject like what we feel like we can inject, like, in this given time, kind of evolve the space. Like, that's mm-hmm. what we really believe in, like, evolving mm-hmm. the space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love that. So working within the space or taking yeah. something from a previous.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I love that you can have two, like, our design styles are ultimately very different, but the mm-hmm. concepts are very relatable. Mm-hmm, I think that's mm-hmm. the beauty of design, is ultimately the end goal is pretty much the same and the concepts are there. It's more, it's just the style could be slightly different. I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So one, is there anything else that you want to chat about or let people know? And two, where can people find your work?
So we have social media accounts. So you can either follow us on Instagram at owiudesign.com. And OWIU sounds like a really difficult abbreviation, but it's actually Only Ways Up.
Which is the name of your company, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Only Way Is Up. So it's OWIU Design. And this will all be on the show notes. If you're watching on YouTube, you're going to click on the description down here and it'll have all their links. And you can also go to my website at hammersandhugs.com where the show notes are, and you'll get all of these links. I also love that you describe some of the projects on your website. Mm-hmm. Like, you talk about sort of what you were doing, what your thoughts for them are. They have beautiful photos. You have done a really good job displaying your work, I think.
Thank you. We have an amazing photographer, actually.
Yeah. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah. Those are not my photos. The photographer's amazing.
I love that. Is there anything else that you want to leave us with? Anything else that we should know about Amanda and Joel and the team?
Well, we also started making like some home goods, like ceramics.
Oh, fun.
So we like hand make our own ceramics now.
Yeah.
So if you want to follow that, you can as well.
And do you ship your products? Okay.
We do. Yeah.
So listeners anywhere.
We can ship to you, actually. I'd love to send you something.
I would love something.
Yeah.
I'll take whatever you want to send me.
Okay. I'll like look at your profile and try to see like what would fit.
Yes. Well, we're currently in a rental house, but I mean, you can see my previous, anything light. Again, I like the French country style. So that's
okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll send you something cute and like feminine. Yeah. Let's do that.
I would love it. I would love it. Well, Amanda, it's been so fun. I could chat design with you forever. And Joel, you've been here in spirit. But I pray God's richest blessings over your business, over your staff, over you and Joel and everything that you are doing out there in LA. I love the work that you guys do. You're making a difference for a lot of people.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I so enjoyed this.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Imperfectly Empowered podcast. I would love to hear your thoughts from today. Head to your preferred podcasting platform and give the show an honest review and let me know what you think. Remember, you cannot be redefined, only redeveloped one imperfect day at a time. Your story matters and you are loved.